This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via a simple address, radioprogram@AOL.com. That's very memorable. And so you can pose your questions, but whatever, you know, whatever's on your mind. Lots of questions this week on my radio program about the vaccine. That's something that I'm going to be writing about in our newsletter this week.
Can't wait to read it, Dr.
We've covered COVID controversies in the past. And so all eyes on the vaccine as we're getting vaccine approvals. It's not going to be that joyous Christmas and Hanukkah season, looks like.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, in spite of circumstances. Yeah, it's a state of mind, right?
Yes,
it's a state
absolutely.
Of mind. Absolutely. It's, you know. Regardless,
I will be defiant and enjoy the holidays.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. No, I think the holidays may take on a special significance as we show our resilience.
Yes.
And our ability to be flexible and adaptable in the face of adversity, and relatively minor adversity, because, you know, it recently was Pearl Harbor Day. That was a period of adversity for people all over the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, merely a couple of generations away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we ought to attack it in the spirit of Chuck Yeager, who was the test pilot. Very interesting man. He died at
97.
Died at 97. Now, here's the thing about who would have suspected that guy who went up in these crazy rocket planes would die peacefully in his bed at the age of 97.
Wow.
So an interesting guy, you know, just to give you an idea of like that.
He was a damn good pilot is what he was.
Damn good pilot. At the age of 18, he joined the Army during World War II. And he was assigned to the Army Air Force. He became a pilot. And then he participated in combat over Europe, got shot down, got taken up by the French resistance. They smuggled him back to England. And they said, you're done, because, you know, you've had your tour of duty, you know, you survived.
Yeah.
You know, this is your ticket home. He said, no, I want to go back into combat. He actually personally obtained permission from Dwight Eisenhower to go back into combat.
Wow.
Where he became a combat ace, you know, shooting down innumerable German planes. Okay, so that was the...
I love the fearlessness.
That was just the beginning. And, you know, so he then... became a test pilot for a lot of these captured planes, German planes, and, you know, some of these things that they had amazing technology, rocket planes and things like
that. Test pilots don't normally have such long lives.
No, they don't. They go up and So and then they sent him up in these, you know, crazy, basically like, you know, candlestick things, you know, that they just, you know, lit up the engine and let her rip. And he flew those And he actually had to eject several times. He disregarded protocol and rules, and he, you know, and they chastised
him. He was fearless.
He was fearless, and so interestingly, he then participated, of course, in the NASA programs, you know, to train astronauts. But he didn't consider being an astronaut like really being a pilot, because he says that's like being a that they send monkeys up in those space capsules, and It's all programmed. It's not really seat of the pants flying, so that wasn't his liking.
He was seat of the pants flying, man.
He kept flying well into his 80s. Uh-huh. His wife passed away, unfortunately. His wife of many years passed away. And at 81, he married a 45-year-old woman. Got in a big fight with his family because his children, who are older than the woman that he's married, got into a dispute with him over his finances. They thought he was going to give all his money away. That's a frequent scenario.
Sure.
But he said, she's my wingman. She's got my six, which is like pilot terms for she's got, my rear end. And, 6 o'clock being the opposite of 12 o'clock, that's behind you. So she's watching out for me. And she stuck with him, till he was 97. They had a long marriage.
Wow.
And interesting guy. Never had a college education. High school educated guy. And, I think we should all celebrate the spirit of Chuck Yeager.
Absolutely.
Going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. He made it one day past Pearl Harbor Day.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that you may have died on Pearl Harbor Day, actually. So... coming up to stories, story that I just want to cover briefly in the news. Interesting story and how poor oral hygiene may result in metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
We know that gum disease is a predictor of cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. Why? Possibly because it's associated with inflammation. Now, is it correlation or causation? Interestingly, what they did is they did an animal experiment where they fed the animals, admittedly, a poor diet. But then they infected them, their oral cavities, with periodontal bacteria. It's called P. gingivalis. That's the main bacteria that causes periodontal disease. Dentists are well aware of it. And surprisingly, they found that just the inoculation of the bacteria made it worse. Made the insulin resistance worse.
Mm.
The mice developed increased insulin resistance and fat infiltration and poor glucose uptake in the skeletal muscle, which is a hallmark of insulin resistance.
Yeah.
How was the bacteria capable of causing this? They say it may have to do with the microbiome. The ones who got the P. gingivalis, their gut microbiome was significantly altered. And that may be a mediator of insulin sensitivity. So the microbiome takes on a lot of importance.
Well, in a similar study, people with periodontal disease have higher rates of diabetes and a little vice versa, but it might be the periodontal disease because any infection in the body will raise blood sugar.
Yes, it puts a stress on the body.
Yeah. And can cause metabolic syndrome and diabetes or exacerbate diabetes if somebody's already got it with periodontal disease. So oral hygiene is so important. Very important.
I think the next research might be to look at the impact of P. gingivalis on the prognosis of COVID-19. In other words, if you have P. gingivalis, are you more likely to have a more serious outcome?
Mm.
And so dentists of the world, all right, it's your moment. It's a teachable moment.
Besides coming out to greet me in a hazmat suit last month.
God. Nobody's going to dentist. Go to your dentist. Get your,
Exactly. Go to the dentist, everybody.
Get your teeth. Yeah. But above all, do the right thing. Eat the right diet. Don't eat a lot of sugar.
Yes.
Brushing, flossing, depends on who you talk to, how instrumental they are in preventing periodontitis. I always get, the dentist says to me, "Oh, I see you've been doing your great flossing." And I don't say anything because, thank you. It's diet.
It is diet.
It's diet. Because, if something gets stuck in there or something, I eat something that's where there's a lot of, stuff between my teeth, I'll floss.
Yeah.
But do I, do routinely floss? Yes, I brush.
I'm good.
Yeah. But.
Yeah.
And there's some dentists who dissent from that, that they think that the flossing may be superfluous. Look, they're going to attract a lot of
contact. Not my dentist.
Yeah.
Not my hygienist. You have to floss.
Floss. Yeah. Well,
We have to.
So let's get into questions. And you want to start with this one?
Yeah, we've got actually an article for Fran. from Fran.
Fran.
And she's asking, have you seen this study?
Mm-hmm.
And it's from breastcancer.org.
It's which actually a year old, it's a study.
Is, yeah. And just to, you know, breastcancer.org research about taking certain supplements before and during chemotherapy for breast cancer may be risky. What I've read here, Dr. Hoffman, I know you're going to expound on all this. I think this is kind of wimpy.
Yeah, and I agree. But, you know, I don't want to take the position that, you know, reflexly like, oh, that's
no.
all wrong because, you know,
no.
you can take whatever supplements you want during
chemo. No, that's not true.
And, you know, so I,
yeah.
we have always, as long as I've worked with you,
yes.
been very selective about the supplements that we give
we have
during
to be careful.
Chemo, during radiation.
Mm-hmm.
On the theory, and this has been a theory that's been around for a long time, is that certain types of chemo works via oxidative mechanisms.
They, yeah.
It creates free radicals to kill the cancer.
Yeah.
And therefore, hypothetically, maybe antioxidants could get in the way of that process. Certainly radiation works that way, but it does generate, I mean, radiation generates free radicals
yes.
that may target the cancer. Of course, it's also responsible for side effects.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would worry a little bit, you know, if patients said, you know, I just breezed through that radiation. I breezed through that chemo. I just, you know, I took a ton of antioxidants. Well, maybe that protects your regular cells
mm-hmm.
from damage, but it might also vitiate or reduce the beneficial effects of the chemo or the radiation.
Yeah.
And it's very individual. It depends on the chemo agent. Every chemo agent is a little different. And, you know, so
they talk about three different chemo agents.
Right. So let me summarize yeah. what they say here
yeah.
and see if it makes any sense. They talk about three different chemo agents, Adriamycin, commonly used in breast cancer, Cytoxan, and Taxol. So what they say here, they looked at, sounds like a lot of people, but only 2,716 people diagnosed with early stage breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
but with a high risk of recurrence. And they studied them for 6 months, which is not enough time, in
no.
my opinion, to see if either they died or if they got a recurrence.
No.
So this a little questionable methodology. And they
right.
asked, they used questionnaires. Now, questionnaires are not always the most accurate way to assess whether people take supplements.
They're notorious. They're based on memory.
But let's
yeah.
give them that. You know, okay, so they asked about the use of vitamin C, A, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, carotenoids, any antioxidant, multivitamins, vitamin D, B6, B12, iron, folic acid, calcium, omega-3 fatty acids, glucosamine, melatonin, and acidophilus.
There's no curcumin here.
Exactly. You know, which it would be. I mean, so when we prescribe...
That would throw a wrench in it.
Yeah, melatonin.
Melatonin.
Yeah, we
that would throw a wrench in it.
When we prescribe supplements for people who are undertaking chemo and radiation, we favor the ones that support immunity. There are some instances... I mean, look, there's some very devastating side effects of Taxol, for example,
mm-hmm.
Peripheral neuropathy.
Mm.
And there's some very good studies that say that certain antioxidants, and, you know, among which are alpha-lipoic acid.
Yes, very helpful.
Really tend to protect against those
mm-hmm.
Effects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, when we're talking neuropathy, we might want to give B12, but B12 might be problematic
right.
because it's not an antioxidant, but it might be a cancer growth factor.
Right.
So in this study... And by the way, we don't prescribe a lot of antioxidants to people
no.
on chemo.
No.
You know, we don't say take high dose E or, you know, mm-hmm. tons of C mm-hmm. or things like whatever.
Oh, melatonin is on this list. I wonder how much melatonin.
List. Okay, I misspoke. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just saw it there.
It's a
okay.
big list, so I mm-hmm. I misspoke. So what they found was, okay, here's what they found. People who said they took any antioxidant both before and after chemo,
mm-hmm.
that's both before and after,
yeah.
were 41% more likely to have a breast cancer recurrence and 40% more likely to die. That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
However,
mm-hmm.
taking antioxidants only before chemo and only during chemo,
yeah.
had no effect on outcomes. So how do you reconcile those
statistics? You can't.
It says people who said they took the antioxidant before and after, they were much more likely to have a recurrence than 40% more. But if they took it during the chemo, there was no effect on outcome.
That's very strange.
Strange. Okay, here's B12.
Yeah.
People taking B12 both before chemo and during chemotherapy were 83% more likely to have a recurrence, about twice as likely to die. That sounds horrible.
Yeah. Huh? Taking multivitamins had no effect on outcomes.
That's the salient part. So how do you reconcile?
There's B12 in there.
Yes.
There's iron in there.
And there's antioxidants.
And there's antioxidants in there. So what are we talking about? Yes.
There's a problem.
So okay. This is a flawed methodology, and it's only 6 months.
Right. So here's the one thing that does kind of make sense. People taking iron supplements before chemo and during chemotherapy, 91% more likely to have a recurrence. Iron is a pro-oxidant.
Yeah.
Infection. You're going to get anemic sometimes with cancer and with cancer treatments, but iron is not the answer.
Right.
So I probably wouldn't overload people with iron.
Because it's anemia of chronic disease. It's not an iron deficiency.
Yes, or immune suppression or bone marrow suppression. You can shove all the iron you want at those people. It won't fix their anemia because it's not iron deficiency anemia.
Right, right.
It's anemia of, like I say, chronic disease. Or bone marrow suppression because of the treatment. And then finally, the kicker, people taking omega-3 fatty acids both before chemo and during chemo were 67% more likely to have a recurrence. So what's the take-home message? Here's what they say. They say, before you take anything, make sure you talk to your doctor and possibly a registered dietitian about what you would like to take and discuss all the risks and benefits. Present company excluded, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Talk to your doctor?
Yeah.
Your doctor's going to say, stop everything. Stop everything.
Stop everything.
They don't know.
Nope.
And they don't.
They don't know.
Care to know.
No.
And a registered dietitian, they're scared little rabbits. they don't want you to take any supplements. And here's a quote from a registered dietitian, who is issuing the party line.
Well, she's part of breastcancer.org.
Okay.
Yeah, she's on the professional advisory board.
For what it's worth.
So, yes, for what it's worth.
She, like you, is an MS. And an RD. To advanced education. She says, quote, though I take supplements, I still believe the overall health benefits I'm receiving from my 9+ servings of fruits and vegetables and 1 to 3 servings of soy foods each day are even more important than the benefits of these supplements. So, like many registered dietitians, she's downplaying the efficacy of supplements. Many registered dietitians say, you know, supplements, well, only under certain circumstances.
Well, at least she says she takes supplements.
Yeah, she does.
She takes supplements, so.
Yeah. But here's the thing. She enunciated here something very controversial. 1 to 3 servings of soy foods each day.
Yeah.
Not clear whether that's beneficial or harmful for breast cancer.
That's right. There are two parties to that still.
And it may be that certain types of breast cancer are more amenable to soy foods than others. So it is estrogenic.
Yes.
And that may be promoting breast cancer. On the other hand, I think in triple negative breast cancer, there may be some benefits of soy foods.
Yeah, because it's a weaker estrogen to endogenous estrogen. And if that takes up the receptor space rather than your own stronger estrogen, all the better.
It's a SERM. It's a synthetic estrogen receptor modulator, like tamoxifen.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Or all that additional phytoestrogen from soy may be joining the party with all of your own estrogen. We don't know.
It could go either way. Exactly. And there's other things about soy. There's some tyrosine kinase inhibition, which is actually an important mechanism in cancer. So soy is controversial in breast cancer. There is evidence that taking soy traditionally, like from childhood through adolescence, through early adulthood,
like in Asian countries,
is protective. However, Western women who like never had soy and all of a sudden they take a ton of soy.
Right.
Maybe
or
that's not such a good idea.
Start drinking soy milk because they're having hot flashes or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unregulated HRT right there.
I got to say that's an unanswered question.
Yeah.
This study does not, I think we need better answers as to what supplements are compatible with chemo and radiation.
Yes.
More studies should be done, but better studies. I also have a lot of questions about, since immunotherapy is becoming very popular now, we know virtually nothing about the interaction between supplements and immunotherapy. immunotherapy works differently than chemo and radiation. So is there a synergistic benefit of taking supplements with that, or is it, does it interfere, or is it neutral? We don't know.
Interesting. Very interesting.
No, but with things like Keytruda, for example, we have no idea how supplements impact that.
Yeah. So studies still need to be done.
Yeah. So, I mean, I encourage this, but I don't think you can draw the conclusion. And I think this patient sent us this because they're fearful.
Yes.
That, you know, this kind of poisons the well for them to take supplements.
Right.
Because it's so scary. I mean, it doubles the risk. I mean,
yeah.
There's some internal contradictions here.
There are. And again, like you said, how do we reconcile that?
Yep.
So the methodology, I believe, is somewhat flawed here.
Yep.
We can't really draw a conclusion. So, Fran, thank you for sending us this.
Yep. And just to reemphasize this, in looking at the study, I looked at some previous studies that show that neuropathy can be dramatically reduced.
Mm-hmm.
Neuropathy, which is a terrible side effect of chemo, through the use of antioxidant supplements and other supplements.
Right.
And typically the ones we might use, B1, B12.
B12, alpha-lipoic
acid,
glutamine.
Glutamine, which is not on this list.
Right.
And glutamine is not an antioxidant.
Mm-hmm.
Glutamine also helps to generate glutathione, which is an antioxidant.
Right. So
we don't know whether the glutamine works via an antioxidant mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, Fran, thank you for that very thoughtful email, that article. Okay. We have an email from Sylvia. I'm a longtime listener of your programs and podcasts. I value your judgment and need advice. I was recently discharged from the hospital where I was treated for a bleeding ulcer.
Mm-hmm.
My hemoglobin dropped to 7 upon admission.
I wonder what the cause was. I wonder whether there was too much non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, too much Advil or ibuprofen.
Aspirin on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
Because her doctor told her to take it at night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sylvia's hemoglobin is now at a 9.5, which is still below normal.
Well, let's translate. Generally, hemoglobin, you multiply by 3 to get hematocrit.
Mm-hmm.
Hematocrit is normally 35 to 40 for women.
Yeah.
So 9 times 3 is 27. So she's 27 when she should be 35 or 40.
Yeah.
So she's not, you know, transfusible. But she's pretty low, and she's going to feel the effects of that.
12 would be better. 13 would be better.
Yeah, she's gunning for 12 or 13.
Yeah. Sylvia says, I'm drinking lots of fluids, supplementing with B12 and iron. What else can I do to raise my hemoglobin levels? We need to cure that ulcer.
Right. Hopefully the ulcer is controlled. Let's presume that she's, you know, the ulcer is now controlled. But what's missing here, I conducted this experiment myself. When I broke my hip, it was very painful, and they gave me Tylenol with codeine. Codeine is an opiate. And so the first thing I noticed was, and I was very anemic. They almost transfused me, but it was very hard to get in position to have a bowel movement, to get on the toilet.
Oh my God, your hip.
It was yikes. And in addition, I was taking an opiate. So that's very
constipating. Forget about it.
So then they said take iron, which is very constipating.
Oh, forget about it. Never go to the bathroom again.
I couldn't take the iron.
Yeah.
So the strategy that I adopted, and you were around at this point, I think, in your time.
Yes.
Is like, let's look at all the foods that are super high in iron. So it was like, you know, organ meats.
I had
liver. I had...
Have some chicken livers. Have some pate.
I had lamb chops. I mean, luckily, I had a support system where, you know, people could bring me great food. I already started in the hospital. You know, the hospital food was garbage.
Oh, my gosh.
I started taking...
All the cans of Ensure I remember there.
Right.
When I visited you.
I couldn't see the TV. It was like a pyramid.
I said, what's going on?
It's like,
and they keep bringing me Ensure.
They said, this guy's not drinking his Ensure. It's like, finally the nutritionist came in and he said, can I do anything for you? And I said, I am a medical nutritionist. So I think I can dispense with your services, but what would be very nice if you could get rid of this this impediment to me watching some TV, because it's piling up on my table here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh my gosh.
So what happened was, and I timed this, I started out at a seven.
Wow.
So worse than her. And I felt weak as a kitten. And normally, if you, under the best circumstances, it takes 120 days to build red blood cells. So let's assume that you're a healthy person and you have full production capability. It's kind of like the vaccine, you know, it's like, let's assume the vaccine's approved. So let's like, produce it as fast as you can. So how fast can you replenish your red blood cell count? Well, it takes 120 days to develop a whole new population of red blood cells. So what I found was that within 2 months, I was about halfway where I needed to be. I wanted to get up to about a 42 or 45 hematocrit, which is a, what, it's about a 13 or 15
hemoglobin.
And so I got about halfway there in 2 months, but I was going like full court press with, you know, iron intake. And then in about 4 months, I was nearly normal. And then within 6 months, I was, it was
there
normalized.
There you go. Yeah.
Given the right iron.
The
B12 is less important.
Right.
You know, unless you suffer from B12 deficiency, it's all about iron.
I would advise Sylvia to take vitamin C with her
to
food.
Help.
Especially with a high heme iron meal like some lamb chops or a steak.
The absorption of.
Yes. Definitely do that.
Don't bother so much with spinach.
No. Spinach, even if you put lemon juice on it or something, but the phytic acid or the phytates in spinach,
it's not that absorbable.
In peas and lentils, don't let you absorb the iron.
There's an iron content,
or the calcium.
But it's not as quality, high quality iron.
Exactly. It's not that bioavailable. So, Sylvia, the most important thing is to heal that bleeding ulcer. We like mastic gum for that.
Yeah, well,
mastic gum.
That's good for healing, and you know, certainly you can consider drinking glutamine.
Glutamine.
You know, also, you know, what's the solution?
The endivin powder.
Endivin powder.
Yeah, that's also helpful.
Which is a combination of different ingredients that soothe the stomach. So, you know, they're using acid blockers, obviously, with her. But to facilitate healing, we want to use DGL. That's going to be good.
DGL and endorphin together would be great.
I didn't want to ignore your point about let's heal the ulcer. Let's work on healing the ulcer for sure, because you know, going from a bleeding ulcer to complete healing takes time. But iron pills can be irritating to the GI tract.
So take some vitamin C with all your meals to enhance the iron absorption from the animal protein you're eating, or That's essentially it for the high heme iron.
Yeah.
So
I think she'll be fine.
Yeah.
All right, let's break, because we divide our podcast into two parts, and we've gone a little long in part one. So in part two, give us a preview of what we're going to tackle.
Is organic extra virgin olive oil better than non-organic olive oil?
Okay, we'll talk about that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions. We'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.